time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. Welcome into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. We're getting ready to dive into an hour's worth of what's happening around the state of Michigan and elsewhere in the sports world as June. Ooh, the end of June really got popping. There's a ton to dive into. We'll be talking about the Tigers, obviously, and what's happened with them as we're getting to the halfway point of the season. And then also Terrion Arnold and what that means for the Detroit Lions as the upcoming season is on the horizon. Michigan basketball and the NBA draft and NBA free agency trade wire has been insane since Tuesday. There's a ton to dive into, especially what's happening with the Pistons and how they handled the last week and the World Cup. There's a lot going on there as well. The knockout stage just around the corner. And, of course, we'll be getting into our picks at the end of the show. I am feeling great. Got another lacrosse weekend coming up for me, so I'm super stoked and excited for that as we'll be out in Rockford, Illinois, trying to bring home another, well, bring home my team's first championship this year, but some of the other teams within our program have won some championships this summer. So looking to keep the good vibes going and have a great time out there, hang out with the parents, which is always a great time as well. And then I'll be watching tons of professional lacrosse as well, as they'll be out in California this weekend before having All-Star weekend next weekend and then coming to our neck of the woods in Chicago July 11th and 12th. So I'll be out over there enjoying that while bouncing back and forth, actually, because I have a lacrosse tournament that weekend as well. So I'm going to be super busy and a lot of driving, but it's going to be a great time. And I'm super stoked for what will be a very fun weekend. But now that we've gotten through all of that, I hope you guys had a fantastic week and you're excited for a great weekend that's going to be full of sports. We'll start with our Detroit Tigers, where we always start in the standings. They are still second from the bottom in the AL Central, where the White Sox are at the top, 41 and 38. Keep that in mind because we're going to touch on that in just a moment. Cleveland Guardians, 42 and 39, tied with those White Sox. Minnesota Twins are 38 and 44, four and a half games back. Tigers, 8 games back at 34 and 47. Kansas City Royals, 34 and 48, 8.5 games back. You look at the American League overall, the Yankees are at the top, 48 and 32, which we'll touch on that in just a moment as well. So put a pin there. The Tampa Bay Rays, 45 and 33, 2 games back. The White Sox sitting 6.5 games back. Guardians also 6.5 games back. The Mariners, 41 and 41, 500 down the middle, 8 games back from the Yankees. The Tigers are now fourth from the bottom. Red Sox are 33-46, and they're 14.5 games back, along with the Tigers. But they sit that one half game above, technically, at 34 and 47. The Royals are 34 and 48, tied with the Angels, 15 games back apiece. The Twins right above, tied with the Orioles at 38 and 44, 11 games back. The Rangers, Athletics, and Blue Jays are all tied at 9.5 games back with the Astros, but the Blue Jays, A's, and Rangers are 39 and 42. The Astros are 40 and 43. When you look at the entire league overall, the Diamondbacks, the Dodgers, the Dodgers are at the top of the league, 52 and 29. Brewers right behind them, 1.5 games back, 49 and 29. Braves, 3 games back at 48 and 31. Then the Yankees, 3.5 games back. Rays, 5.5 games back. Phillies, 7 at 45 and 36. Tigers are out of the bottom five. The Mets, Red Sox, Royals, Angels, Giants, and Rockies all sit below them. Rockies at the very bottom of the league, 20 games behind the leaders at 32 and 49. looking back over at the Tigers, the batting leaders, Riley Green, 2.92 in the batting average, his on-base percentage of .386, slugging percentage of .440. Dylan Dingler leads the team in home run jacks. He's got 19. His ERA, or his batting average, 2.68. His RBI is sitting at 57, which also leads the team in that department. Pitching, Framber Valdez in the ERA, 3.91. He's got 4 wins, 75 strikeouts. He also leads the team in wins now, which is an interesting stat because Tarek Skubal's back, so we're going to be expecting him to pick up some wins here pretty soon. And Jack Flaherty still leads the team in strikeouts, 78. 1 win on his belt, ERA of 5.35. As a team, they have 325 runs, which is tied for 26th. The batting average of .234 is at 25th. On-base percentage of 3.13 is 20th. And slugging percentage of .391 is 21st. Over on the pitching side, the ERA of 3.80 is 7th. The quality starts of 30 is tied for 8th. The whip of 1.25 is 9th. And the opponent batting average of .237 is 11th. So once again, the pitching is doing a phenomenal job of helping the team win games or even stay competitive in games. But if the bats can't go, it's only going to last so long. And granted, Gleyber Torres was back for a second and things were looking like they were on the up and up. And then he got hurt again and boom, the batting went right back into the tank. Like, that has to be a serious issue. Like, you can't have it where two guys aren't in the lineup and now it's just terrible for the bats. Like, where's everybody else? Like, you guys can't hit the ball without one or two guys in the lineup. Gleyber Torres and Javi Baez go down and now nobody can hit the ball. That's one, a little suspicious, and two, crazy. You have to be able to hit the ball at this level or your team is never going to win. And we're seeing a lot of that here with the Tigers this season, where the bats are dying, but the pitching is doing a phenomenal job. Jumping into their schedule to look at what we've seen over the last week and what's coming up over the next week. They came out of last weekend with a 2-1 series loss to the Houston Astros. 9-3, they won game one, lost games 2 and 3, 4-2 apiece. Heading into the weekend, they get a sweep of the Chicago White Sox, who are currently leading the American League Central Division. Once again, the American League Central Division. The Tigers are second from bottom in the American League Central Division. Yet the Tigers just swept them 4-3, 4-1, 5-4 in extras in the 10th inning. So it's not that the Tigers don't have the skill. It's not that they can't hit the ball. It's not that they can't drive in runs. It's not that they can't hold batters to limiting contact and getting on base and scoring runs. It's that they don't do it consistently. It's that as soon as one or two guys gets hurt, all of a sudden the whole thing crumbles apart. There's no depth to the team when it comes to the Detroit Tigers, and it has become a serious issue. And then they kept the win streak going. They got to 4 games in a row as they went into the series where they were hosting the Yankees at Comerica Park with a 5-3 win on Monday. Then they lose 4-3 on Tuesday and they lose 4-2 on Wednesday. So they lose that series 2-1. And then, as you know, recording this on Friday, they lose the series opener to Houston 2-1 on Thursday night. So they have the Friday 6:40 game that you already know what happened between Montero and Arrighetti. And then Sunday or Saturday, you have Valdez and Tang and then Mize and Brown on Sunday in the 4-game series before you have to host the Yankees or go on the road, excuse me, against the Yankees Monday, 7:05 p.m. At Yankee Stadium, Skubal against Weathers. Tuesday, 7:05 p.m. at Yankee Stadium, Melton versus Schittler. And then you have Wednesday, July 1st, 1:35 p.m. at Yankee Stadium, Montero versus Warren. And then you have Thursday, where you're playing the Rangers, 8:05 p.m. Maldez versus Rocker. Then there's an off day on Friday the 3rd, and then you play July 4th, 4:05 p.m., Mize versus Quintrill, and Sunday, July 5th, Schuylkill versus DeGrom, 3:30 p.m. I mean, the Rangers is a very comparable series for you. You should be able to go out and handle business against the Texas Rangers and come out on top of that game. The question marks are, how are you going to handle the rest of this Houston Astros series going into this weekend and finishing this weekend, and then the early week series against the Yankees with no rest? Mind you, the Tigers have played since Friday, June 19th. They have played Friday, June 19th, Saturday, June 20th, Sunday, June 21st, Monday, June 22nd, Tuesday, June 23rd, Wednesday, June 24th, Thursday, June 26th. They'll play Friday, Thursday, June 25th. They'll play Friday, June 26th, Saturday, June 27th, Sunday, June 28th, Monday, June 29th, Tuesday, June 30th, Wednesday, June 1st, and Thursday, July 2nd, or Wednesday, July 1st, and Thursday, July 2nd, before getting a rest day. That may play a factor into also how some of these games will play out and if they're going to be able to come out with some victories in this game and how the rotation will look, who will be playing in the outfield, etc., as it's hard to play that many games in a row. But the main thing to keep our eye on is the pitching rotation, which seems to be pretty in line here. Montero, Valdez, Mai, Schuylkill, Melton, and then it seems to be going a five-person rotation from there. So shouldn't be too many changes there. And then they'll have a three-game series against the Athletics and the Phillies the second week of July, which will end out the first half of the season for the Tigers before the All-Star break. And then, of course, they'll have the second half of the season, which I promise you gets no easier. So if the Tigers want to make the playoffs, they're going to have to make a little bit of a run here at the end of this first half so they can have good momentum heading into the second half of the season. Now, another news coming out of Detroit is wild, and we're not going to talk a ton about it now because we don't have a ton of time. So before the break, I'll just touch on the Detroit Lions. Terrion Arnold was arrested for allegedly and is facing kidnapping and robbery charges, which we're going to dive into all the details that we have available to us to catch you up to this story and what we know. But wow, this is a crazy story that has so many layers and will affect not only himself and not only the Lions, but a lot of other people. But that'll be after the break here on Mid Madness on 95.3 The Ticket.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. And as we mentioned before the break, Terrion Arnold from the Lions has gotten into quite the conundrum. Now, all allegedly, because he has not been convicted of anything. So we do not know exactly what is going on. But I will tell you what we do know. Detroit Lions cornerback Terrion Arnold is facing multiple felony charges after he was arrested Wednesday in Tampa, Florida, in connection with the robbery and kidnapping in early February. Tampa police previously arrested six other individuals involved in a targeted armed robbery that took place shortly after midnight on February 4th, during which three men were pistol-whipped, held at gunpoint, and robbed according to police. Police say Arnold was the primary conspirator. He is accused of coordinating and directing the co-defendants to lure the three men to an apartment where the assault occurred, according to a release from the state attorney's office. Arnold turned himself in and was taken into custody at Orient Road Jail in Hillsborough County on Wednesday night. He faces four counts of kidnapping and four counts of armed robbery, which carry a potential sentence of life in prison. He is scheduled to appear in Hillsborough County Court Thursday afternoon. In court on Thursday, those counts were amended to three counts of kidnapping, three counts of armed robbery, one count of conspiring to kidnap, and one count of conspiring robbery. And then, obviously, all carry that heavy sentence still. The state attorney's office said it would file a pretrial motion to keep Arnold in jail until trial. A date for that hearing has not been set. According to police investigation, the incident began after personal property belonging to Arnold and others was stolen February 1st from an Airbnb that Arnold rented in Largo, Florida, and periodically stayed at with the six co-defendants, Ariana Del Valle, Jasmine Randazzo, Lindell Hudson, Christian Watson, or Christian Williams, Bokai Hilton, and Freddie Lee Hughes III, and other friends. Arnold Hilton Hughes and other individuals reported property loss totaling more than $250,000 to the Largo Police Department on February 3rd. Arnold, according to Tampa police, suspected that two of the three victims in the kidnapping case were responsible for the Airbnb robbery, but investigators later determined they were not involved. The state attorney's office, in its release, accused Arnold of orchestrating the kidnapping and robbery just hours after reporting the missing items to the Largo Police Department. Investigators said they located a group chat in which Arnold and Hilton reportedly gave directions to Duval, Williams, and Hudson during the assault at the apartment. Two of the defendants in the case have pleaded guilty, and the other four are being held without bond, according to the Hillsborough County State Attorney's Office. In a statement Wednesday, Denise White, CEO of EAG Sports Management, said Arnold categorically denies any involvement in the matters underlying the allegations made against him and maintains his innocence. There is no credible evidence linking Mr. Arnold to these allegations. Instead, the government appears to be relying on testimony from the multiple convicted felons who have admitted their own involvement and may have substantial incentives to shift blame in an effort to lessen their sentences. Mr. Arnold looks forward to his day in court and is confident that the judicial process will lead to his ultimate vindication. The Lions in statement said they were aware of the situation but declined to comment out of respect on the ongoing legal process. Arnold was approached by reporters about the off-field incident during the Lions veteran minicamp June 17th and declined to comment, saying he just wanted to focus on football while coming off a season-ending shoulder surgery. There is really no more information beyond that. He did, you know, go into court. They did not give him his... they did not give him a bond, so he is held without a bond until his next court date, which has not been set just yet. So he's going to be in there for a little bit of time, and this is going to be an interesting case that unfolds. And obviously, with him being a Detroit athlete, this is something we will keep a mind on. But I will imagine the Lions are going to have to press forward without him in mind, but that is a banana story to think about, in the fact that there really isn't a ton there for him. But with that being said, we'll hop on over to Little Caesars Arena and talk about the Detroit Pistons a little bit with the NBA draft. For those who don't know, AJ DeBonsa went number one, Darren Peterson two, Cameron Boozer three, Caleb Wilson four, Keaton Wagler five, Michael Brown Jr. 6, Darius Acuff 7, Kingston Flemings 8, Morez Johnson Jr. went 9, which is very, one, a Michigan guy, as a lot of you know, and also key for just a second, which we'll talk about in a moment. Braden Burries goes 10, Yaxel Landenborg goes 11 to the Warriors, Ade Mara goes 12 to the Thunder, Nate Amet 13, Heinz Steinbach from Washington goes 14, Dalen Swain, 15. Bennett Sturt, 16. At 17, traded to Detroit via Memphis, Ibeka Okori, which we'll talk about in just a few moments. Or really, we can dive into it right now. I mean, He's an elusive guard who plays low to the ground, changes pace effectively, and has a good feel for getting to his spots. Although he's on the smaller side, he can be disruptive defensively. He's small and slight for a lead guard, and there are questions around what level of passer he will be in the NBA. While comfortably shooting from deep, he can be streaky on threes. Okoro was a surprise one-and-done player riding the wave of a strong freshman season in the draft. While his skill set may project more easily as a second-unit playmaker, the shot creation he showed as an 18-year-old freshman was no less impressive. He showed a considerable knack for scoring and vaulted himself into the first-round picture. Memphis capitalized on the strong demand for guards in the range of the draft. ESPN's Shams Charniere reported the Grizzlies traded back again to number 21 with the Pistons moving up. Okoro has had quite the rise, riding momentum from a surprise one-and-done year at Stanford. The Pistons were known to be searching for offensive help and another ball handler. Take the pressure off star Cade Cunningham. Okoro should fit the bill, and this is absolutely true. A lot of people have questions about a big Ibuka Okoro and how good he's going to be at this level. Granted, he's 6'2", 185, and that is a little small, but he is the 12th best guard. He is the 24th best player overall in terms of how they are looking at the prospects. And at the same time, did y'all know he played at Stanford and he had eight 30-point games in ACC conference play? Once again, eight 30-point games against some of the best teams in the country. The North, the Dukes, the Virginias, the teams we're used to seeing in the NCAA tournament every year, the Louisvilles, right? So why are we questioning how good of a scorer he can be when that's clearly something that the Pistons need help with? How good of a ball handler he can be when you can see the stats and you can see those are things that he can do? How about you go look at some tape? And I'm not talking about highlights. Go look at a couple full games and tell me Okoro can't score the ball at an extremely high level, because he can, and he's going to help the Pistons out at an immense level on that tip, and is going to be able to help Cade Cunningham relax and have a little bit more freedom in his game as well. Christian Anderson Jr. goes 18. Allen Graves goes 19. Jaden Quintance goes 20 to the Spurs, which is insane because that team is just, they're nasty. Kareem Lopez goes to Memphis. LeBaron Fylon Jr. goes to the 76ers. Zubi Okafor goes to the Hawks. Cameron Carr goes to the Knicks. Sergio De Laria goes to the Lakers. Terrence Reed Jr. goes to the Nuggets. Chris Sanok Jr. goes to the Celtics. Joshua Jefferson to the Timberwolves. Alex Caravan sneaks into the first round and goes to the Cavaliers. And Koa Pete just makes it as the last guy in the first round to the Mavericks, which I believe he's actually going to end up as a Knick. It says traded to Phoenix via the Knicks, but hey, I don't know how that's going to work. I just know he's got a Maverick sign next to his name, and that's who's there. Bruce Thornton goes 31, Richie Saunders 32, Isaiah Evans 33, Malik Thomas 34, Trevon Brazil 35, Boba Miller 36, Ryan Conwell 37, Braden Smith 38, Jack Khalil, 39. Dylan Mitchell, 40. Otega Owe, 41. Jacoby Jalepsy, 42. Tyler Bilodeau, 43. Malik Brown, 44. Emmanuel Sharp, 45. Felix Okpara, 46. Tyler Nickel, 47. Toby LaWall, 48. Bryce Hopkins, 49. Jaden Bradley, 50. Isaiah Nelson, 51. Henry Vassar, 52. Ugana Unyesu is going to be a Piston. He was traded to the Pistons. He's out of Virginia. And a little tidbit here. He just broke the NCAA blocks record for a single season. You know who held it before him? Anthony Davis. And now he owns the record. Why? Because he went out there and dominated, because he's a giant and is a great prospect. As a rim protector, the NBA length, Oyesu was the country's second leader in shot blocker with 2.9 per game. Outside of defense, on Yesu's game is limited. He often struggles to score and doesn't have much of a secondary skill set. Coming from NBA Academy Africa, and Yesu blossomed at Virginia, his third school, as the defensive backbone of a 30-6 team. Those defensive skills will need to be elite enough to stick in the NBA, but he's a valid developmental depth option in the second round. The Knicks traded back into 53rd and then out of it, with the Pistons moving in to grab on Yesu. He's a talented shot blocker who gives Detroit depth up front after trading away big man Isaiah Stewart. It's a great plug and play for Isaiah Stewart, even though you have B-Ball Paul, who will certainly be above him. LeJay Jones, 54. Nick Martinelli, 55. Nick Veselvov, Ischenko goes 56. Narisi Nagoe goes 57. Jaron Pierre Jr. goes 58. Trey Kaufman Wren goes 59. And Malik Lewis goes 60. But with that being said, there's a lot to talk about with Michigan as Dusty May has moved on to be the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks, which is why that's such a big deal for Merez Johnson to have gone 9 to the Dallas Mavericks, being reconnected with his college coach who knows his skill set the best and will be able to pair him with Cooper Flagg and anyone else that they bring into that locker room to generate success. That seems going to be great, but also it leaves the University of Michigan and that team with a lot of question marks. So we'll touch in a little bit more on the Dallas Mavericks, Dusty May, and Merez Johnson Jr. reconnecting, but also where that leaves Michigan and more in the next round or in the next segment after the break here on Mid Madness on 95.3
The Limited.
As an organ donor, your story doesn't have to end. The good in you can live on. In fact, you could save up to 8 lives with your gifts. Your heart could keep beating. Your kidneys could keep filtering. And your intestines could keep on digesting for others. And that's not all. You can improve the lives of 50 more people as an eye and tissue donor, restoring sight and health. And you're not just helping out the person receiving the transplant. You're touching whole families with your life-saving gift. Register in minutes. Just go to organdonor.gov. You'll be happy you did. And just maybe, someone else will be happy too. Sign up today. Go to organdonor.gov. It saves lives. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do Washington a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA, America's wireless companies, and the National Safety Council.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and well, we left off talking about Dusty May, Merez Johnson, and the Dallas Mavericks. And here's a little bit more. Former Michigan coach Dusty May was named the Dallas Mavericks head coach on Tuesday, an axis shifting move that significantly alters the college and NBA landscapes. We set out to find a leader who embodies the values we want to define our organization. Mavericks president Masi Ujiri said in a statement, Dusty has won at every stage of his career because of his ability to build. He develops players, creates accountability, and brings people together around a shared standard of excellence. His work ethic is extraordinary, and his teams consistently reflect his values. When you study his journey, you see someone who has earned every opportunity through preparation, discipline, humility, and an unwavering commitment to improvement. We believe those qualities make him the right leader for the Dallas Mavericks. May, 49, led Michigan basketball to the national title in 26. He'll coach a franchise with Cooper Flagg as a linchpin player. The Mavericks fired Jason Kidd after a 26-56 season last year. May led Michigan to a 64-13 record over 2 seasons in Ann Arbor. In his previous job, he led Florida Atlantic to back-to-back NCAA tournaments, including the 2023 Final Four. He had ruled out other college jobs this offseason, but the NBA has been intriguing to May. He's the first college head coach to take an NBA job since former Michigan coach John Beilein took the Cleveland Cavaliers job in 2019. The last to leave college immediately after winning a national title was Kansas Larry Brown in 1988. Florida's Billy Donovan was the most recent NCAA title-winning coach to leave for the NBA in 2015. I'm honored to join the Dallas Mavericks organization, May said in a statement. This is one of the most respected franchises in professional sports, with passionate fans, a talented roster, and a clear commitment to building a championship organization. The move puts May in charge of the Mavericks' next generation, which is being created around Flagg, the NBA's Rookie of the Year last season after leaving Dallas. by scoring 21 points per game. The move puts Michigan in a sudden state of flux. After the Wolverines' dominant run to the NCAA title, Michigan appeared well-positioned to repeat as ESPN's Jeff Borzello ranked Michigan number 3 in his early top 25 rankings. May's departure means that Michigan's players can explore their future options, as under NCAA rules, a 15-day transfer window will open 5 days after a new head coach is hired or publicly announced. Michigan named former assistant Mike Boynton Jr. as their interim head coach. Boynton brings head coach experience from Oklahoma State and will attempt to keep a talented roster in place. That roster includes the Final Four most outstanding player, Elliott Cadeau, talented rising sophomore, Trey McKinney, and a new crop of talented transfers that includes J.P. Estrella, Mustafa Thiem, and Jalen Reed. The Mavericks parted ways with Kidd soon after hiring new president and alternate governor, Masai Ujiri, to run the franchise's basketball operations department. Despite owning Kidd more than $40 million over the remaining 4 years on his contract, the Mavs went 205 and 205 in 5 seasons under Kidd, highlighted by Dallas's run to the 2022 Western Conference Finals and 2024 NBA Finals. However, the Mavs didn't make the playoffs the past 2 seasons after the stunning controversial trade of superstar Luka Doncic to the Los Angeles Lakers in February 2025, a move that ultimately resulted in the firing of general manager Nico Harrison in November. League sources told ESPN's Tim McMahon. Dallas also gazed the interest of Duke's John Shire, who coached Flagg during his lone season in college. They also searched for Kidd's replacement. The process also included interviews with several NBA assistant coaches, but the Mavs prioritized recruiting May. So that is how Merez Johnson Jr., less than 6 hours after they announced Dusty May, drafted Merez Johnson Jr. with the number 9 pick, reuniting the two, surprisingly becoming the first of 3 Wolverines pulled off the board in the lottery. Landon Borg went 11, and Adair Mara went 12. The 6'9" forward started 40 games and obviously helped with 13.1 points and 7.3 rebounds. He said he's looking forward to playing with Cooper Flagg. I think he can get us dangerous, the two of us on the court at the same time. I've been playing against Coop for a long time. I'm very excited and happy that I'm on the same side as him. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as well. But Michigan is in quite the position, as guard Elliott Cadeau and Trey McKinney have both said they plan to remain with the Michigan Wolverines following Coach Dusty May's departure. His agent, Drew Gross of WME Basketball, for Elliott Cadeau told ESPN on Thursday. Cadeau started all 40 games in Michigan's national championship run last season, earning most outstanding player in the Final Four. After tallying 13 points and 10 assists in the semifinal over Arizona and 19 points in a title game win over UConn, the 6'1" point guard Cadeau averaged 10.5 points and 5.9 assists per game in his first season in Ann Arbor. He began his college career with 2 seasons in North Carolina before transferring to the Wolverines last spring. Cadeau is the second key player returning, definitively announcing his return following Trey McKinney's announcement earlier in the week. McKinney was one of the best bench players in the country as a freshman, averaging 9.9 points per game and setting up a likely breakout season in 26-27. May sent shockwaves through the basketball world Monday morning when the news broke that he was leaving the reigning national champions to coach the Dallas Mavericks. Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel announced Tuesday that assistant coach Mike Boynton has been appointed head coach in an interim capacity because Michigan named only an interim coach. The 15-day transfer portal window for the Wolverine players will not open until 31 days after May's departure. That changes a lot in that scenario, and we'll probably keep a lot of those players in Michigan for this season, including Cadeau, McKinney, and many others. So it should be okay, but I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out and how the coaching will be different along the lines of Dusty May not being there. But with that being said, a little touch in on the World Cup as we're all wrapped up over there. The U.S. men's soccer team did lose last night to Turkey as the final whistle blew at SoFi Stadium. It was difficult to know what to make of the United States men's national team's 3-2 defeat to Turkey. Should it be frustrated at conceding a late winner, or should it take some solace in a performance that saw some of the team's less experienced players grow in the game? There will likely be a bit of both. At times in the first half, the U.S. looked overwhelmed by Turkey's technical proficiency, but the Americans responded with a gutsy second-half performance that appeared to have headed to a 2-2 draw. But Turkey had the last word with Kaan Ayhan netting in the 8th minute of stoppage time to secure a 3-2 win for the Crescent Stars. A gut punch for sure, and one that will serve as a lesson for the U.S. men's national team. Not that many of the players were looking at it that way. I think tonight it may be just half a step back, but again, we know that If we want to beat good teams, we have to play 90-plus minutes of hard football and get results, said defender Chris Richards, who was given the night off. So for us, we look at the positives from tonight. Obviously, every game is going to have some negatives, but you can learn from. So we're just using it as a learning opportunity rather than a gut punch. U.S. manager Mauricio Pochettino, man, that is a hard name to say. I'm sorry, y'all. Felt compelled to stress the big picture that it is the U.S. men's national team that is moving on in the competition. The mood is like we are going home tonight and Turkey is staying. He said, I need to remind you and everyone that we won the group. Sorry, guys, we won. It was a performance that was by no means an oil painting with huge oscillations between positive and negative play. This was to be expected given that the manager fielded a heavily rotated lineup. The Americans' play was aided by the return of Christian Pulisic, his entrance in the 58th minute, his first minutes in the tournament since coming off at halftime in the opening match against Paraguay, saw the U.S. immediately look more fluid in attack. Prior to his entrance, the U.S. had been heavily reliant on set pieces. It showed just how much better the hosts are when Pulisic is on the field. So there's a lot going in there, but a couple matchups that we already know that are going to be coming up as the bracket starts to form itself. South Africa and Canada will play on June 28th. Netherlands and Morocco will play on June 29th. USA and Bosnia will play on July 1st. Brazil and Japan will play on June 29th. Ivory Coast, Mexico, Argentina, Australia, Switzerland, and Germany are all waiting opponents at this very moment in the round of 32. But things are starting to spice up. I will imagine that a lot of those matchups will be figured out by the time you guys listen to this on Saturday. Well, Friday and Saturday will be the last few matchups to decide. Norway, France, Senegal, Iraq, Cape Verde, Saudi Arabia, Uruguay, Spain, Egypt, Iran, New Zealand, Belgium on Friday, and a host on Saturday as well. But when we come back, we'll be getting into our picks here on Mid Madness on 95.3 The Hoopla. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. Breaking news here as I'm recording this. The Thunder are trading Isaiah Evans to the Pistons for multiple picks. I just got that from Sharms Charnia notification on my phone from ESPN. So recording this here on Friday, that just came through. So I guess the Pistons are still trying to make moves, but I'm going to be honest, I'm still not convinced that they have gotten everything they need to make things happen, but eventually they will. But enough of that. It's time for us to get into my favorite part of the show, the picks, which you can play right along with us using the chat feature on the 95.3 The Ticket app. All you have to do is listen to the picks every single week. There's always six of them. And then, of course, I'll be sitting here telling you why I'm so good at what I do and why I know all the things that I should know about ball and why all my picks are going to be right. And then I'll do a little more research and babble some more. And then I'll tell you my picks. And then you can listen, write down those same picks, do your own deliberation, research, have your own conversations, and figure out how your picks are going to be right and why they're better than mine. And submit them into the 95.3 The Ticket app using the chat feature. And if you do better than me, we can have a real conversation and get you something special. But I do want to remind you, nobody's been able to beat me yet. Jacob took his chances three times. Tied once. So he came close just one time. But those other two times, no questions from your boy. I ran through them and was able to get the big dubski. So, you know, if you want to be next on the platter, you absolutely can be. But I just want to remind you, it's tough sledding over here because, you know, like last week, your boy had a big 6-0 week. Big 6-0 week for your boy. The Dream took down the Fever. Aces took down the Valkyrie. Dream over the Tempo. Liberty over the Aces. Valkyries took down the Dream. And the Yankees won the series against the Tigers 2-1. And I picked it all right, 6-0, which improved me to 62-52-1 on this season of picks. Man, football is still so far away, so I'm hoping I can keep up this good stretch because I need a whole lot of help to make sure I stay positive, because it can go down south real fast. But we got to get six more games loaded up this week. Hopefully you're playing along. We'll start in the WNBA, and we'll start with the Los Angeles Sparks taking on the Indiana Fever. This game will be at Gainbridge Fieldhouse on Saturday, or later today, June 27th, 8 p.m., Indianapolis, Indiana. The Sparks are 8-9, 5-3 on the road. The Fever are 10-8, 7-4 at home. 32.6% chance for the Sparks, 67.4% chance for the Fever. Kelsey Plum is expected to be out for this game with a lower leg injury until at least July 28th. Cameron Brink is out with an ankle injury until July 10th. Kate Martin is a game-time decision based on the coach until maybe this game. So we'll find out. This will be on CBS and Paramount Plus. FUBU for those who watch over there. Caitlin Clark, a game-time decision for her back. Justine Passat and Bree Hall are both out on coaches' decisions, so they may be back as well. Fever are 8.5-point favorites. They said -425 on the money line, +330 for the Sparks, 178.5 on the over-under. And looking at these injuries, I might not have even picked this game if I knew that these injuries were sitting the way that they were. Fever won the first game of this series back on May 13th, 87-78. And I think they're going to win game two of this series as well. This is going to be a tough one. Even if Caitlin Clark doesn't play, Kelsey Milstrom and Aaliyah Boston, they got work. And it's going to be uphill battle for the Sparks without Kelsey Plum, regardless, as she's averaging 23.9 points per game, 6.4 assists, only 3.1 turnovers in 35 minutes. Like, that's a lot that you're losing. Shooting 52.7 and 80.6 from field goal and free throw percentage. It's crazy. You know what I'm saying? So that's a big loss for them. So I'm going to take the Fever to win this game as well. Also happening in the WNBA, the Minnesota Lynx 14-4. 8-1 on the road, taking on the Wings, who are 11-7, 6-2 at home. Minnesota are the leading team in the WNBA. They're up one game on the Vegas Aces in the Western Conference. Dallas sitting tied for third, 11-7, 3 games back. They are 6-2 at home, as this game will be at the College Park Center in Arlington, Texas. They're giving Minnesota a 50.4% chance to win. They're giving the Wings 49.6% chance. Paige Beckers, Jessica Shepherd, Ozzie Fudd, Olivia Miles, Natasha Howard. I mean, this game is lit up. Obviously, we're still waiting for the return of Nafisa Collier. Odyssey Sims is still out. Costanza Verona is out. Alana Smith is out. Laitu King is out. There are a lot of outs here, but a lot of players who are still playing. The Wings are 3-2 in their last 5 games. They have a win over the Aces, 96-66, a loss to the Valkyries, and a win over Chicago, an overtime win over the Storm, and then a loss to the Aces, 99-84. Meanwhile, the Lynx, they're 4-1 in their last 5. Win over the Fire, the Sparks, the Valkyries, a win over the Mystics, and a loss to the Mystics as well. So they're right in the thick of things. This game will be on Sunday, 2 p.m., CBS and Paramount Plus. Big-time game going down in Texas. The only reason this one is even hard to pick is because it's going to be at home, where the Wings are so good at 6-2. But the problem is the Lynx are equally as good, if not even better, on the road at 8-1 on their road record. 8 of their 14 wins are on the road, so they've only won 6 home games, and then 1 of their 4 losses is on the road, so they've lost 3 games at home. They're 6-3 at home and 8-1 on the road. That is crazy work. And when you look at this series, the Lynx have already won the first 2 games, 90-86 back on May 14th, and then 176 on June 9th. I think that they win a third and win the series, even if they lose the last game here. So I'm going to take the Lynx to come out victorious over the Wings. Liberty versus Valkyrie going down on Sunday. It's going to be on ESPN, Disney Plus, 7 p.m. Liberty are 12-7, 6-3 on the road. Valkyries are 11-7, 8-3 at home. They're giving the Liberty a 54.3% chance. Valkyries 45.7% chance. Chase Center in San Francisco, California. Satu Sabali, a game-time decision with a head injury. Breonna Stewart was out on rest, a game-time decision in that game as well. But it looks as if she will return. The Liberty are 2-3 in their last five. They have losses to the Mystics, the Sparks, and the Storm, but they have wins over the Aces and the Sky. Valkyries are 3-2 in their last five, wins over the Sparks, Wings, and Dream, but losses to Minnesota and the Aces. This game is at home, where the Valkyries are 8-3. They play very well. Breonna Stewart will play. They did beat the Liberty at home 87-70, or beat the Liberty on the road 87-70 back on May 21st. I got to think the Liberty's going to want to get their get back, and Breonna Stewart's going to be healthy even without Satu Sabali. She's got help in Pauline Astier and many others who can fill the bucket. Gabby Williams, Kayla Thornton, and Veronica Burden will have their hands full, even though they got them the first time. I do think the Liberty strike back and are able to grab this win on the road, where both these teams are playing in good environments for themselves. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think with Breonna Stewart coming back, and they better hope Satu Sabali doesn't come back, because if she does, I really don't think the Valkyries will have enough to compete with both Breonna Stewart and Satu Sabali healthy, playing, and with a little vengeance after dropping the first game. So I'm going to take the Liberty there as well. Brazil and Japan will be playing in the round of 32 on Monday, 1 p.m., Fox, Fox One, Telemundo, Fubo. They'll be playing at NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas. Moneyline, -135 for Brazil, +390 for Japan. 2.5 goal favorites are Brazil, or half goal favorite is Brazil. 2.5 goals sits on the over-under. There is a +280 for a draw that will lead to penalty kicks. In their last five head-to-head matchups, Japan 3-2 in a friendly in 2025, 1-0 friendly in 2022 for Brazil, 3-1 friendly in 2017 for Brazil. I'm a little confused at how this one played out here. It's pointing toward Japan getting the win, but no, they didn't. Brazil won 4-0 over Japan in international friendly in 14, and then a 3-0 win for Brazil in 2013 as well. So, I mean, looking at that history, am I going to pick anything other than Brazil? No. I already was coming in thinking I was going to like Brazil, but that almost solidified it. Japan has had a horrible time playing against Brazil. So coming up on July 1st, 8 p.m., on Fox, Fox One, Telemundo, and Fubo. United States will take on Bosnia. We'll be at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. USA, -225 on the money line. 1.5 goal favorites. 2.5 sits on the over under. +650 for Bosnia. A +360 for a draw. In the last three matchups, a 1-0 friendly for United States in 21. A 0-0 tie in 2018, and a 4-3 friendly win for America in 2013. America's 3-2 in their last five. Bosnia has three draws, a loss, and a win in their last five. Looks like America has not only the home field advantage, but also a little bit of momentum on their side. Not that I was going to go against USA while they're at home anyway. I'm going to take the United States over Bosnia, and we're going to move on because there's nothing else to talk about there. South Africa will take on Canada later today, 3 p.m. on Fox, Fox One, Telemundo, Fubo, SoFi Stadium, Inglewood, California. +450 for South Africa, -140 for Canada. Canada's a half-goal favorite, 2.5 on the over-under, +270 in the draw compartment. Last friendly goes to South Africa, 2-0 back in 07. South Africa has two wins, a loss, and two draws in their last five. Two draws, two wins, and a loss for Canada. I mean, everything's pointing toward Canada. I don't know what to think. I want to pick South Africa, but I don't really like them, so I'm going with Canada. That gives me Fever, Lynx, Liberty, Brazil, USA, and Canada. Make sure to get your Tigers coverage here on 95.3 The Ticket. And we're going to be back next week. Talk more Michigan sports and elsewhere on Mid Madness on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.